Welcome. Thanks for coming out. We're going to start a couple-part series today. Didn't start out that way, but there's so much information. As John said, we're going to talk about the rapture and things. Today, we're going to get into the lead-up of that and see what the Bible actually says about things. But today, I want you guys to see how God is working behind the scenes in your lives and how God works when it seems like your prayers are bouncing off the ceiling and it seems like you're all alone and you're hopeless. And how that ties in with the end times and with the rapture. And so through the first half of this, you're going to wonder, where in the world is he going with this? Right, Helen? She always says, sometimes I don't know where you're going with things. But thank you. So there's a new show on TV. Have you guys seen it? It's called America and Keller. Have you seen it? Anybody? Great show. It goes through each week. They go through a decade in the history of America, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, I think it starts in the 20s, and they take all the old films and they colorize them, and they tell you what happened throughout the decade. It adds humanity to the images, because, you know, we look at the Holocaust pictures and things like that, and they're all black and white, and it kind of, you can kind of distance yourself from what the people were going through. So the decade on the 1940s begins with, of course, World War II. Which officially started in 1939, but Tim will tell you it was about 10 years before that. So it's 1941, and the entire European continent is at war. But here in America, life goes on as usual. We don't want anything to do with it. We don't want to hear about it, don't want to know about it. It's over there, it's not our problem. Hitler's not our problem. We're just going to stay out of it. Charles Lindbergh, everybody, you young guys know who Charles Lindbergh is? Anybody not know who it is? Who is it? First person to fly across the Atlantic by himself in a plane. So he was an American hero. Charles Lindbergh was also a huge Nazi supporter and a follower of Adolf Hitler. And so he was going around the country making speeches to keep America out of the war. And Americans listened because he was somebody that they looked up to. And so we did. We just closed our eyes and acted like nothing was going on. All we wanted to do was be blissfully unaware of what was taking place in the rest of the world. Until December 7th, 1941, what happened? Pearl Harbor. The war came to us. Here's the point. Pretending something doesn't happen and hiding your head in the sand doesn't prevent reality from happening. It doesn't prevent things from coming and from taking place. There are usually two sides when we do prophecy and end time prophecy. Either excitement, people want to learn all they can about the end times. Most of it, they want to know who the Antichrist is and when all that's coming about. And the other is, I don't want to know anything about it because I don't want to have to worry about it. Now, as Christians, that kind of confuses me because as Christians, the end of the world is like the greatest thing ever for us. We're going to go live in a paradise beyond anything you can imagine when we go home to Christ, when he comes for his church. Barb took last week off of work, and I told her this yesterday. I'm sure to her it looked like I'm just sitting around doing nothing because all I did was sit on the couch all week. And she's probably thinking, is this what you do every week? But I was actually gearing up for this. I read a couple of dozen publications about the last days. I read two books about the rapture and the end of time. And I was going through and highlighting and making notes and praying and doing all those things. So I read two books on the last days. One's by a guy named Chuck Misler. And I'm just going to use John Green as an example. I'm just picking John out as an example, okay? On the intelligence scale, here's me. Here's John Green. Here's John MacArthur, right? Here's Chuck Misler. Okay, so the guy knows his stuff. Brilliant man. And the other one is Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye. They wrote the Left Behind series. The Left Behind series, if you haven't read it, young people, I encourage you to read it. It's a fantastic series. But it's based on the last days and the tribulation period, the last 7 years. And in this book about the end times and the rapture and the church and the second coming, they actually point out what was fiction in their books and what was not fiction. But the thing is, they've been considered among the world's leading experts on end time prophecy for over 30 years. They're not just authors, they're both pastors. And so the more I dug in with this stuff, the deeper in the hole I found myself. This is such a deep subject. Where do I begin and where do I end? What are the relevant things, and what do we need to know as a body of believers about what's going to take place in the last days? So here are some things we're going to answer this week and next week. Does the Bible teach that the church will be raptured? Does Scripture reveal the Antichrist? If there is a rapture, is it the same thing as the second coming of Christ? Is Armageddon the only war in the last days? How does the United States fit into all of this? Why do we need to understand prophecy and end times prophecy? Some people are afraid of it. A couple people used to come to the church that don't come anymore because they were afraid, they didn't want to hear about this stuff. But there's only one book in the Bible, Revelation, that opens with these words: blessed are you if you read and understand the prophecies that are written in this book. So understanding end times prophecy is the only thing that guarantees a blessing from God. It's the only book that says that. So get comfortable. I hope this is going to be a fascinating couple of weeks for you guys, and that you're going to learn to trust Jesus when it doesn't look like he's working. Now listen, we're going to have to go through some things to get to the Bible part of this, but we will, I promise. The story leading up to the rapture has been in the Bible for thousands of years, but the countdown began 102 years ago. The year was 1917. In 1917, Russia was a small-time player on the world stage, a bit player. They were nobodies. Okay, we would compare them today, if the whole world went to war, we'd compare them to Mexico. Okay, they just didn't have that kind of role in world power. And so in 1917, at that time, the Bible, when you go through, the Bible refers to the Russians over and over and over as those barbarians to the north. That's how the Bible refers to Soviets in Russia. So two events changed the world forever, and they took place just 4 days apart. World War II is raging. It was basically Germany against the world. On November 2nd of 1917, the British government signed into law the Balfour Declaration. What that did was give the land that we call Israel back to the Jewish people. And so the Jews started returning home from all over the world to their homeland, Israel. That, by the way, the Jews returning to their homeland, is the last Bible prophecy that has to happen before the rapture, the last one. So it started happening in 1917. Just 4 days later, on November 6, 1917, Vladimir Lenin led a coup and took over the Russian military and the Russian government, and just like that, Russia became a power on the world stage. Two things happened. This becomes important because of what happens as a result of that. The end result has not yet been played out, but it's going to be. We call it the Ezekiel 38-39 war because it's described in chapters 38 and 39 of the book of Ezekiel. The consequences have been playing out for over a century now. See, God's been moving the pieces. To the world, it looks like we have World War I, then we have a couple years of peace, and we have World War II, then we have the Cold War, then we have Vietnam, then we have the Gulf War, and here we are today. But it's not like that from God's perspective. See, God is moving pieces into place, putting things where he wants them. And you will see he's been doing this since the days of Noah. After World War II, the United States arises as the world's only superpower because we developed the atomic bomb. Russia soon had their own atomic weapons. Despite our best efforts, Russia had spies in our nuclear program, and so it wasn't long after World War II before Russia developed nuclear weapons. And then and now, the United States and Russia are number one and number two in world power. They're the most powerful military nations in the world. But superpower number three might surprise you. It's not China. It's not Great Britain. It's not Germany. Superpower number three in the world is Israel. And that comes into play as we lead up to the rapture. They've played a bigger part in world history than we realize. We went through a little decades-long thing called the Cold War. The Cold War was when the United States and Russia didn't trust each other, and we were both building our nuclear arsenals, and we were on the brink of destroying the entire world with nuclear weapons several times. So there's a little thing called the Cuban Missile Crisis. And what happened is the Russia, I don't know if you guys are familiar with geography a whole lot, but Cuba's not that far from Florida, okay? You can get there by boat in a couple hours. And so Russia wanted to put nuclear weapons in Cuba that they could aim at the United States. And everybody thinks that this ended because Kennedy faced up to Russia and took a stand, and the Russians got scared of Kennedy, and they backed down and they went home, and that's just not the way it happened. Actually, we blinked first and gave in to a whole bunch of concessions to the Soviets. But Russia was afraid to continue because the United States has one great ally in the world, little nation of Israel. And Israel was right on Russia's doorstep. And Russia didn't want to get into a war with Israel. Why not? Why are they afraid of little Israel? 1947, the Soviet Union was now led by Joseph Stalin. Stalin, by the way, killed way more people than Hitler. Voted in 1947, Russia did, to allow Israel to become a nation again. The Soviets were hoping that Israel would align with them and become a communist nation. And when that didn't happen, Russia turned and joined with the Arab states that are surrounding Israel. By 1967, the Arab world was ready to annihilate Israel, wipe them from the map. And Russia was only too happy to help. Without getting directly involved, the Soviets supplied weapons, tanks, planes, strategy to the Arab nations. This is all going to make sense to you guys, I promise. Syria and Jordan were ready to attack Israel. Russia convinced Egypt to join with their Arab neighbors and attack Israel from the south. So Israel has their back, their western border is the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, and now because of Russia, all the nations around them are ready to attack Israel. Can you put the first slide up, please, Zach? So here we are. Here's Russia. Up here you can see how big Russia is. And there's Turkey and Syria and Iraq and Egypt and all these. Here's Israel right here. Why are these guys, we did a little bit of this last week or a couple weeks ago, why are these guys afraid of these guys? After all, these guys and these guys and these guys and these guys were all helping them fight. They want to annihilate this little country right here. June 5th, 1967, 10 minutes after 7 in the morning, 16 Israeli airplanes take off on a routine flying mission. Now what Israel did is, see, when they fly, they use, you know how we have air traffic controllers, so they're using the air traffic controllers in these nations here as they fly around, and so they think it's just another routine day. Israel's in contact with them, everything seems fine. 5 minutes later, another 183 Israeli planes took off, the entire Israeli Air Force, that's all they had. They flew out over the Mediterranean Sea, here's the Mediterranean Sea out here. They flew out over the sea and dropped below radar. The fighters turned towards Egypt in complete radio silence. Knowing that their enemies were preparing to attack them, Israel decided to attack first. So they come out here, and they fly low over the ocean, and they come in, and here's Egypt in here, okay? And they got their airfields right here, all their air force. And so Israel comes in with their entire air force. Everybody thought it was a routine control, patrol. Now here's the thing. God had Egypt's government officials, some of their leading officials, were doing reconnaissance flights that day. And so they had told all their ground people, don't fire at anything in the sky because you might hit us. And so Israel took advantage of that, and that's when they decided to attack Egypt. As a consequence, the Israel Air Force went completely unchallenged. See, they tricked Another thing they did is they tricked Egypt into believing they had a much larger air force. And Tim will tell you that this takes a lot longer than what Israel did. They've been planning for this for 2 years now. And so they had their 183 planes, and they came in and they bombed the airfields in Egypt. And then they flew back home to Israel, and then they came in again every 10 minutes. And so Egypt thought they had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of planes in their air force. But Israel had been training like this, kind of like NASCAR drivers. And so Israel, the pilots and the crews, learned that they could land, refuel, and rearm in 8 minutes and get back to the airfields and been dropping bombs within 10 minutes. And so they convinced Egypt that they had this huge military force when really they didn't. The Egyptians lost all of their bombers and every one of their Soviet MiG jets that day. The MiGs are the Russian equivalent of our F-16s, F-15s, their best airplanes. They never even got off the ground. Listen, and they were all sitting in a row. You know why Pearl Harbor was so successful for Japan? We had all our ships lined up in a row. Here's the first one, and then here's the second one, and then here's the third one, and then here's the fourth one. It's just like sitting ducks. And that's the same thing that happened here in Egypt. They just came along and just wiped them all out. Israel wasn't finished. They bombed the Iraqi airfields. Here's Iraq over here. So now they come around here. They're over here in Iraq bombing their airfields. And then they wiped out the entire Jordanian Air Force, every plane they had. And then they came up here and wiped out two-thirds of the Syrian Air Force. As a result, in 6 hours, all these nations, with these guys backing them, went home with their tail between their legs. How do you explain that apart from God? It's an impossibility. God's protecting these people. Now, here's the point of all this. You can start to see why Russia is reluctant to go after Israel or the United States to get in another war with us. How were the Arabs caught so off guard? See, Russia was sending reconnaissance planes, and they were convinced that Israel was building up their forces up here on the northern border. And so these guys, Syria and Jordan were the main players, they amassed all their troops up here when really Israel was attacking down here. How did Russia get it so bad? How did they get it so wrong? Because God deceived them. They picked up things in their reconnaissance planes that just weren't there. They thought Israel was amassing large numbers of troops up here, and it just wasn't true. But that's what they saw in their reconnaissance flights. Russia believed they saw things that weren't there. The result of all this was that Russia and her Arab allies begged the United Nations to sign a peace accord so they wouldn't get annihilated, wiped out by Israel. This all plays into the Ezekiel war, which is not yet taking place. And here's how. Now to our Bibles. You're probably wondering, what does all this have to do with the rapture and the final years of man's reign on earth? Well, see, this is going to happen again. See, all these nations, only this time it's going to be these guys and 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 these guys, Ethiopia down here, and Russia, and Kazakhstan, all these guys are going to come against Israel again. That's the war of Ezekiel 38 and 39. It's going to happen again. The Arab nations are going to join together to annihilate little Israel. But here's the thing. Russia wants nothing to do with this coming war. They want to stay out of it just like we did in World War II. Even though, you can see, look at the size of these countries. But they want nothing to do with this. But Russia's not going to have a choice. Ezekiel 38:2. Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him. A bunch of names that don't mean anything to us, okay? So here's where these names come from. Genesis 10, 1 and 2. These are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, and Ham, and Japheth. Sons were born to them after the flood, Noah's family. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshach, and Tarshish. So the nations listening to Ezekiel go all the way back 2,600 years back to Noah's flood. And so all the way back here, God is already moving the pieces into place so that when we come to the end times over here to the Ezekiel war, God has everybody just where he wants them for the final war of mankind. God's moving things into place for all this time, even when it looks like he's not working. Here's how this would read in modern language, by the way. These are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Sons were born to them after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Armenia, Uzbekistan, Madai, Javan, Turkey, and Tarshish. So you start to add some modern nations to this. Slide number two, please, Zach. The color should be a color map. Here they are. Here's all these nations. Rosh up here is Russia. Magog over here. Persia is Iran. Cush is Ethiopia and the Sudan. Put is over here, okay? So these are all the nations that are listed in the war. And once again, here's Israel, little Israel. So these are the lands that God says in the end times here are going to come against Israel. Ezekiel 38:3, and say, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, O Gog, prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. Rosh, by the way, comes from the name, from the time of Noah's flood. It's in the Bible several times. In English, it is Reshu, Russia. We have cylinders from 2,600 years ago that bear this out, by the way. Ezekiel 39, 1 and 2 says that the descendants of Reshu live in the remotest parts of the nation directly north of Israel. That would be Russia. Ezekiel 38, 5. Persia, Cush, and Put will be with them. These are just the old names of the modern Arab countries. These nations today, Persia, Cush, and Put, are Iran, Libya, and Ethiopia. So you're going to have a coalition of nations including Iran, Turkey, Ethiopia, Libya, Armenia, and Uzbekistan with Russian help coming against Israel. Slide three, please, Zach. These are the current leaders of Iran, the Soviet Union, and Turkey. These two guys hate this guy. For all their history, there's been a divide here. They wanted these guys bad, Iran. They wanted them gone just as bad as these guys wanted Israel gone. But recently, within the last few months, they all signed a peace treaty together to join forces. It was like in World War II. You know what happened in World War II? You know why Britain was so involved? Because Britain promised that if somebody attacked France, that they would come to their rescue. Same thing with these three guys. Now they have a pact. See how God's moving things into place? We're coming into the last days. But here's the thing. Russia's not going to come willingly. With the largest nuclear arsenal in the world and millions of men in their army, why is Russia so reluctant to join this force? Well, listen, we haven't identified who Gog is yet, but we have a clue. Back to Ezekiel 38, and say, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, O Gog, prince of Rosh, Rosh is Russia, Meshach and Tubal, these are the nations around Russia, okay? So we have to identify who Gog is. Daniel 12:1. And we're going back a good ways here. Now at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, the sons of your people are Israel. Michael's the great what? Prince who stands guard over them. See, every nation has either a demonic or an angelic host protecting them. For Israel, it's Michael, the archangel. For Russia, it's a demon named Gog. You can go all the way back through history, and Russia has always hated God. All the way back to the time of Noah's flood, they have hated God. Want nothing to do with him. That's what communism is. Okay? So all that time, Gog has been the prince over Russia. Michael is the chief prince over Israel. Here's the thing. Gog was there when Michael and Israel won the Six-Day War that we talked about earlier. Gog was there when Israel won the 1948 war, and the 1973 war, and the 2006 war. He saw and he knows how powerful that the forces behind what we see are. God and the angels, the chief angels. And Gog wants nothing to do with them again. He's already been defeated over and over and over, and he doesn't want anything to do with them. But listen, Gog and Russia are not going to have a choice. Ezekiel 38. It's actually verse 4. I gave Zach the wrong thing. Give him this message from the sovereign Lord. Gog, I am your enemy. The other one was right, Zach. I just gave you the wrong. Yeah. Give him this message from the sovereign Lord. Gog, I am your enemy. God is telling this chief demon that you want a battle, buddy? It's coming. Next verse, Ezekiel 38:4. I will turn you around and put hooks in your jaws to lead you out with your whole army, your horses and charioteers in full armor and a great horde armed with shields and swords. Those of you who ride horses, how do you steer the horse? How do you control the horse? Right, you put a bit in its mouth, right, a bridle. And you pull it, and the horse will do whatever you want. You want it to go this way, you pull it like this, and the horse has no choice. That's what God says he's going to do to Russia in the end days, to Gog, the demon ruler. He's going to put him, he wants nothing to do with these guys back here, but God's going to put a hook in his mouth and turn him around, and he's going to have to come back here and join with all these Arab nations. This is what God's going to do to Russia. He's literally going to force them to join these Arab nations. Look at how God describes the... Now remember, they're using language that they could understand. We're talking here. By the way, Russia is the only military in the world that still has a huge horse brigade of military people. Their army has a huge cavalry. Look, they're armed to the teeth. The whole army, everybody, going to come against Israel. So why will God do this? Why is he going to bring all these people against Israel? And what's it have to do with us? Ezekiel 38:9. You and all your allies, a vast and awesome army will roll down on them, them being Israel, like a storm and cover the land like a cloud. There will be millions and millions. This is the biggest military force in human history up to this point. It's going to be a bigger one. Ezekiel 38:15. You will come from your place in the far north, that's Russia, you and many nations, that's the Arab nations, with you, all of them riding on horses, a great horde, a mighty army. Now, horses here probably describes tanks and things that he didn't understand at that time. But you can see that God's saying this is going to be a huge military force coming against Israel. It'll appear that it's all over for Israel. Listen. Sometimes you feel like you're at the end. And you've been praying to God and calling out to God and nothing's happened. And your prayers are bouncing off the ceiling. You're burying people you love. Problems don't go away. You feel helpless and you feel hopeless and you feel like God doesn't care. God doesn't even know what you're going through. Listen, God's moving the pieces in your life. And I promise you he's going to work it out for you if you allow him to do so. So it looks like Israel is about to be destroyed. Ezekiel 38:16. And you will attack my people, Israel, covering their land like a cloud. Millions and millions and millions of armed military people. At that time in the distant future, I will bring you against my land, Israel, as everyone watches. We've reached that stage, right? God bless you. We can see all this on TV, on the internet. You can see everything as it happens, as the whole world watches, and my holiness will be displayed by what happens to you, Gog, then all the nations will know that I am the Lord. Ezekiel then goes on to explain that all this has been prophesied beforehand. By the way, God bless you. By the way, Gog will possess a human host. You won't see a demon. You'll see a Russian leader. Okay, and we know that because Gog, the human, is going to be killed and buried in this war. But then later on at the end of Revelation in chapter 20, Gog is still a role player on the scene. So the person that Gog inhabits, possesses, dies, but the demon doesn't die. Okay, he just goes to find another host. God continues in Ezekiel 38, 22 and 23. We're nearing the end. With pestilence and bloodshed, I will enter into judgment with him, him being Gog. And I will rain upon him and his hordes and the many peoples who are with him, torrential rains and hailstones, fire and sulfur. In this way I will show my greatness and holiness, and I will make myself known to all the nations of the world. Then they will know that I am the Lord. Listen, it seems like God is doing things. Sometimes, even as Christians, we can think, why are you doing this to me, God? Why are you letting this happen to me, God? Listen, it's so God can be glorified in you, in your situation, in whatever you're going through. My main sources for this next part are Lion and Lamb Ministries, Joel Rosenberg, and Israel My Glory Publications, all Hebrew publications. Here's the thing I wanted you guys to see today. God works behind the scenes in world affairs, and he works behind the scenes in your life. And he'll make something of your life if you allow him to do so. And listen, it didn't make sense when all these nations came against Israel in 1967 until God was glorified. And it didn't make sense in 2006 when rockets were falling by the thousands on Israel and no Israelis were killed because God was glorified. All these things are going to happen. And you think that with God destroying all these nations in a miraculous display that the whole world watches, you would think that the world is going to turn to God and they're going to fall at God's feet and they're going to worship Jesus as Lord. And that's just not what's going to happen. Romans 1:21, part A. They knew God, but they wouldn't worship him as God. Now, if we studied Revelation for 2 years, and if you go through Revelation, you see that the worse and worse and worse and worse it gets on planet Earth, the more people turn from God and curse God and want nothing to do with God and blame God and spit in God's face. It's amazing how Satan has blinded people. What about Christians? How are we going to look at all this? Last slide, please, Zach. Here's how I see it happening. Some people disagree. Most of the sources I quoted you there agree with this. Rapture of the church, we're gone. Days, weeks, or years go by. Listen, this doesn't have to happen to start this. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that the rapture starts the final 7 years or the final 3.5 years. It doesn't say that in the Bible. Rapture happens. A period of time goes by. The Ezekiel 38-34 war. No United States. Why? What would take the United States from being the superpower in the world to being nothing? To not coming to Israel's aid? To having God having to step in to save Israel? Listen, it's not economic collapse. We could still survive with economic collapse. The only thing that could take the United States from being a superpower into being back in the Stone Ages is for millions and millions of people to disappear at one time. We call that the rapture up here. So the rapture happens. The United States is no longer a world power. Russia and all the Arab nations come against Israel. Days or weeks or years after that, we don't know. the final seven-year period will begin. This is when the bowl judgments will be poured out in the book of Revelation. Halfway through that, the Antichrist will be revealed. Listen, the Bible never tells us to look for the Antichrist. He's revealed down here. He comes onto the world stage. People are going to know who he is. We're gone up here. So we need to quit looking for the Antichrist and start looking for the return of Christ, because that's what the Bible tells us to look for. And then finally, Armageddon, Christ returns, and the thousand-year reign of Jesus on planet Earth begins. Nothing has to happen, biblically, for the rapture to take place. It could happen before we go home. It could happen before you get your next breath. Nothing has to happen. Today was just kind of a setup for you guys to show how God is moving and how we're moving towards the end of time. We are rapidly approaching this war. Rapidly. All the players are in place. I showed you where the Russian and the Iranian and the Turkey ambassadors, leaders, they all have formed a new coalition to protect each other. That's never happened before. We're moving into place. Next week, we're going to learn where we are and what we're doing after the rapture. While all this is going on, we're going to learn the difference between the rapture and the second coming of Jesus. It's important stuff to know because it prepares your hearts to receive Christ. The Bible says, don't let us become entangled in the affairs of the world. In other words, quit worrying about stupid stuff. Stuff that's never going to happen anyway. Or stuff that's going to be so minute that you're going to wonder why you ever worried about it. Quit worrying about that stuff. What you should be concerned with is being prepared for the return of Christ. That's what the Bible tells us. Quit looking for the Antichrist and start looking for the Son of God. I love you guys.